Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So glad you found us on your dials or your buttons or whatever you're using to listen to us. Welcome back to Real Talk with Caleb. Y'all know the deal around here. We keep it real. Stay hard to kill today or tonight, wherever you're listening at and wherever you're listening from. Got a special guest on with me. I tell you what, we go back quite a ways. It's another brother of mine, if you will, a military. We've served in the military together. Just a great human being, has been through a lot, has a lot of information to share that I know is just going to reach people and it's going to make an impact. But before we get to all that, I want y'all to please welcome to the show, Jeremy, the real one, Lauk. Lauk, brother man, welcome to the show. What's good with you?
Man, it's a pleasure. It's the first time for me, so you just stand by and we'll say whatever comes to mind. I'm excited to be a part of the show.
Awesome, brother. Well, thank you so much for accepting the invite and to come on and just share your wisdom. I tell you what, before we get started in this and you share your wisdom, there might be somebody out there, I don't know how it's possible, but there might be somebody out there that doesn't know you. So you mind sharing with the audience just a little bit about who you are and what you're about, man?
Yeah, I sure can. I grew up in South Mississippi on a small bayou, and then I lived in Louisiana for a while, and then went through school, you know, dropped out of school at 16, didn't have a plan, knew I wanted to go in the military, though, and at that time, you had to have a high school education or a GED and some college, so I went and knocked college out and worked and came in the military, thankfully, and came in 95, went to A school down in Gulfport, Mississippi, training with the Seabees. Went to Structures and CE for about 5 or 6 months. And then they shipped me off to Edwards Air Force Base for 3.5 years. And then forwarded that to 7 years in Germany. And the rest of my time was at Barksdale.
Oh, Barksdale, man. That's where we ran across each other, right? I mean, that's where we met up at and did a tour in Afghanistan together. But we'll get to all that. Man, again, just blessed by our friendship, by our, you know, you being with me and as part of the brotherhood and the profession of arms, man, it's just been great knowing you over the years. We didn't grow apart necessarily, but we didn't talk for quite, you know, just hadn't had a conversation in a while. And man, just out of nowhere, one of our mutual friends hit me up and said, man, you know this Jeremy dude? And absolutely, man, we got reconnected for sure. But anyway, yeah, so small town Mississippi, you decide, what made you want to join the military, man? What called you into the military?
Partially because I knew it was a good paycheck, and I was in ROTC, and my adoptive father is also a Marine veteran, so you know it was kind of instilled in me about the military from a young age.
Yeah,
you know, of course, that being back in the 80s, life was about good order and discipline as a child, and as far as the cleanliness of your room and your hygiene and your appearance with your clothing, you know, that was all had a standard.
I got a question for you, man. You're absolutely right. That definitely is something we definitely grew up with in our generation. But your Marine Corps pops there, did he ever have or use the phrase seek, close with, and destroy? Did that phrase ever come out of his mouth when he was pertaining to discipline and you?
No, I never heard that.
Yeah, never heard that from a devil dog. I bet you didn't, man. I'll tell you what, I spent a little bit of time with the Marine Corps. Got a ton of respect for our brothers and sisters that you know, that are Marines. And man, I tell you what,
Marines are a blast to be deployed with.
Absolutely. Hey, that's where I got my experience that, and I went to the gunnies course with them. But we over here, we conversating already, man. This is going to be a good one for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, you might want to buckle up for this ride, because Jeremy's going to drop some wisdom bombs on us about leadership and about how not to screw things up. And he has got quite a story, quite a testimony that he's walked through life in. And I tell you what, yeah, you're going to want to buckle up and get you a mirror and go ahead and look at yourself in the mirror when you listen to this, because all of us got something to learn from his story. Jeremy, why don't you walk us through what you want to share with us, man? Kind of, you know, just get open up for us and tell us, hey, kind of like what you're going to cover, and then let's get after it, man.
Roger that. But, you know, before I begin, I just want to put this out there that I'm going to try to alleviate putting anybody on blast by name. But if there is that individual in the listening audience, you know, it sucks to be you, because it's finally time that karma come back and did what she's supposed to. So with that being said, you know, I'm going to try to alleviate that. But basically, I was deployed for, it was 4 months of CST and a year tour. And I got injured over there two different times, but I came back and got back into the squadron and everything. And I knew my back was jacked up. So in 2011, I had the first surgery. That was in July 2011. And then in December of 11, I had to have my second surgery to correct some things, but then there was another problem. And then following spring, I had a MRSA washout for MRSA infection. And then again in July, and that's what initiated the PICC line and all of that nonsense. But chronologically speaking, that started in 11 and I didn't retire till January of 13. So outside of three duty days, almost that entire time after my first surgery, I was on convalescent leave. Every 30 days at the 29th day, I'd go to the med group, get another slip, another 30 days. You know, it's just how I had to live. But what really kills me about the lack of leadership, in my opinion, is, you know, yeah, granted, he was a first-time commander, and granted, you know, the chief was deployed at one time and interim first sergeant. It was a whole bag of variables in that equation that didn't make matters any better. However, my chain of command was being briefed because the superintendent was talking to my colleague every day and getting a intel report from him, basically, because, you know, he'd call and check on me every day. Mm-hmm. And he was running up the flagpole as if he had made the jester himself. That's four different back surgeries, so that's four different times admitted in the hospital. Never once was there a show of force from a commander, a first sergeant, a chief, a superintendent. I didn't see any of those. My recovery care coordinator was the only person that I saw when I went to sleep and when I woke up. It would not have been for her, and being a bulldog that she is in the RCC world, or what she was at that time, that was my saving grace. I mean, I had a home health care nurse that came in for almost 16 weeks.
Jeremy,
every day she was there.
Sorry to cut you off, man. If we could go back, or you know, just so the audience can get a full appreciation for this. I mean, what you described, no matter how the injury occurred, what you've described so far is my goodness, you know, as a lot of people would start thinking already, like how disconnected based on what we know and what you're sharing with us, man, like, my goodness, that leadership team up and down the chain sound disconnected for sure. But let's go back. I don't want you to relive anything that you're not comfortable with or share anything you're not comfortable with, but it's not like you just woke up one day and your back was hurting. You're a combat injured combat veteran, right? I mean, so you've been in the suck, so to speak. And I was there with you for one of the tours. And then this was a follow-up or subsequent tour. I went off to Japan and you were already on deployment again. Cause that's, you know, obviously we were in the same unit at that time, but so you came back from a deployment, right? So it's not like you just woke up one day and your back's hurting and it's a little bit of a slow getting to the leadership chain. I mean, this is a returning combat veteran that's got issues with the physical issues, you know, in the back. Walk us through a little bit of that, if you don't mind, like how it actually started out. And then, we'll go through the depths of like your advice on the leaders through these types of situations.
Yes, sir. Basically, we was in light armor that day, and we was only six clicks outside the wire. We were headed to a ribbon-cutting ceremony for a school that we had just finished in monitoring, you know, DOD funds, but built by local nationals. Mm-hmm. And it was actually an all-girls school, and we were pretty excited about being able to open that. Well, unbeknownst to us, there wasn't no threat level. There wasn't nothing on the threat comm board, but we got hit going over a bridge and it tore the first two labs clean in half. Mm. So threw me and the driver and everybody else out of the truck pretty much. And it rattled my brain pretty bad too. So that, you know, that later on I found out that I have a TBI, but it was two different situations that caused that. But basically that's what happened. We got blown out of a vehicle. Mm. There were no KIAs that day, but there were four Purple Hearts.
Man, it's a blessing that there wasn't. It's a miracle, honestly, that there wasn't any KIA. Thankfully, there wasn't, but it's a miracle that it wasn't. But yeah, so, you know, I just wanted the audience to fully grasp, you know, it's not making light of any injury at all. But I mean, my gosh, you're getting blown out of light armor. That's a whole different ball game, so to speak. And so, you know, as I've been in the squadron leadership levels at multiple different levels of leadership, I guess you could say, and anytime something happens to one of our deployers, anytime something happens just in general, but definitely with deployments, and we're getting airmen in our case, because we're airmen, getting airmen returned home, you know, injured from a deployment, man, my goodness, there's always leadership presence. Well, I guess in your case, obviously there's not always leadership presence. And that's the crux of this situation and the crux of what we're wanting to talk about, because while yes, you are, you know, you've been through a lot of stuff and you've battled physical injuries. What I got from you when we were just chatting, man, is the lack of leadership presence and the lack of caring about another human being, and that human being being you, is what seemed to cause some of the most pain, or be the most one of the sources of a lot of pain for you. You want to talk about that as much as you're willing, because I think that will resonate with anybody that's in any leadership position, military or not, of about how that makes someone feel, how that makes another human feel when you just basically give them the idea that you don't care.
Right. Well, I'll give you the answer and then give you the build up to that. To be honest with you, when I retired 28 Jan of 13, I was very, very, very bitter at the United States Air Force. I didn't want to see the Air Force. I didn't go on base. I didn't deal with anything if I didn't have to. And I didn't necessarily talk down about the Air Force as a retiree, but I dang sure didn't boast my pride. Let's sure. put it that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of times to alleviate having to expose myself as an Air Force veteran, I would normally just say military, and I just left it at that. They assumed what branch I was in, and I really didn't care. But it wasn't just one individual. It was multiple individuals within that chain of command at that time that should have had more visibility. That's just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I talking to a talking to a chief one day after I had briefed with General Rand, and he says, well, why didn't you speak up and say something? And I said, sir, I said, you know, it's sometimes that's just not what we do in the military. You just shut up and color and realize that you've got bohica and you move on with life. But looking back, you know, if I was that commander, or I was that first sergeant, or I was that chief, I would feel really crappy about myself.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You should feel that way. If you know, it's you're in the position, I tell people, man, it's we're entrusted. When you're in a leadership position, you're entrusted to lead, care for, protect, take care of, not coddle. You know, we're grown folk in the military, not coddling, but take care of, lead and inspire, motivate and take care of our nation's sons and daughters. You know, as a parent, my son's in the Air Force, and I, you better believe I expect his chain of command to do what they're supposed to do from a father's perspective, not only from a chief mass sergeant perspective, but from a dad's perspective. I absolutely expect a chain of command to take care of him. So talk about not speaking out in the military about stuff like that, you know, and when you're in that situation, man, correct me if I'm wrong. You're not thinking about, you know, speaking out necessarily. You're just like, man, what's wrong with me? What's going on with me? You know, I've got physical ailments. Now I'm, you know, like you said, you had TBI and there's other things that are going on. I'm not sitting there looking about, hey, well, I'm going to go tell so-and-so that, you know, my chief or my whatever, right? My chain of command is not doing what they're supposed to do because you got your own battles that you're going on with or going on with you. So yeah, it's easy to say that on the other side about like, why didn't you ask for help? Well, I kind of shouldn't have to, right? I'm a combat wounded veteran. I shouldn't have to ask for help. But on the other side of that, even though you did find yourself in that position, that's not the first thing that you're going to think of doing. So
that's right. Well, also in 2012, it wasn't the primary driving factor, but it had a ton of weight to it. But I had a failed suicide attempt in 12, and the chain of command letting me down had things to do with that, because I just felt like that I'd served 17 years and deployed 8 times, and I get hurt and you just leave me there to die pretty much.
Yeah.
And that same coworker actually found me in my house in septic shock.
Mm.
And he had to call a paddy wagon on me. But yeah, it wasn't, it was a long ordeal. And yeah, there was times when I was dealing with the mental health stuff that, you know, obviously the first sergeant was involved. due to his position in the squadron and it being mental health, you know, that's usually their liaison to the squadron, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that part of it went well, but it just seemed like anything and everything from the medical side of the house, I had to tend to, and my chain of command knew only because somebody had briefed them. They didn't take the time to call or stop by or anything like that.
It's so crazy to me that, you know, we can do that as humans, right? That no matter what level of position you are, if, you know, it's that we have somebody that's suffering and into your own statement, you know, had attempted to take your own life. Thankfully that was unsuccessful and still not to bother to even text you or call, or I don't know, my goodness, just drop by and see how somebody's doing. So it's just really incredible to me how as humans we can let stuff like that slip past us.
Right. And another example of that is the same in the shops when somebody's deployed. I would always tell my airmen and my junior NCOs, I better not hear that Sergeant so-and-so's spouse or Airman so-and-so's spouse had to cut her grass or was broke down somewhere and had to get help from a civilian, or had an electrical problem in their house and she couldn't get a hold of nobody. I better never hear that out of my shop. You're part of your extra duty when your troop is deployed is making sure that his family's squared away or her family's squared away. And that's always been a big deal to me, because to me, that's leadership. Yeah, that man can go do his job downrange and not worry about things back home because he knows the shop has a six. And of course, at that time, too, Caleb, I was up in planning, so I was in the head shed to begin with.
I got
out of sight, out of mind, since I was recovering from everything. So that in itself, you would think that would have had a little bit more personal rapport with the chain of command, but at that time, I pretty much mentally checked out anyway.
Yeah,
I was done with it.
Yeah. So just real quick, a note for the audience. When Jeremy's talking about the head shed, that's essentially like what you might consider is, like, if you're a civilian, the C-suite, if you will, for your corporation. That's where the ball sits. It's where your upper chain of command, your upper leadership is in those facilities. And Jeremy's saying he's working right there in that facility, not necessarily in the same floor, same office, but within that facility. So and in the Air Force, we don't have skyscrapers, right? So it's not like this is a huge facility where you could get lost for a year and nobody finds you. But thanks for sharing that with us, Jeremy. So in all of this situation that you've gone through, I know there's been so many life lessons, leadership lessons you've pulled from it, because I know the type of person you are, the type of character you have. You're always looking for the bright side of it, and you're a positive dude, you know, from when I knew you and to we're speaking today, and I'm sure well before that, you always try to look at life in a positive way. And man, for you to get in those dark spots, I know it had to be bad. But instead of me rambling on, tell us, if you don't mind, a couple of those examples or leadership examples or life examples or lessons that you want to share with the audience that you've been able to pull from your entire ordeal, man.
You know, I carry on something that I've pretty much said all my life. And, you know, this applies to anybody in the listening audience. You know, there's two things that I strive to ensure that young kids in my life, my nieces and nephews and my son and everybody like that, they understand that it's not good when you have to come to me because you got bad grades in school or you've been clowning around not doing your homework or, you know, pursuing that education. And then the other side of that being respect. That's two things that no one can take from you, is education and respect. But as a leader, you have that ability to really promote that intrinsic motivation within people. And I saw you do it many, many times as, you know, the NCYC, the dirt boy shop. You know, I saw guys in that dirt boy shop that wouldn't have never darkened a door in school. And then after being in your chain of command, you know, lo and behold, they taking two college classes now. But, you know, that leadership is one that's not spoken. You lead by example.
Absolutely.
So, you know what that tells me, with going back to the situation with the chain of command, that they've never been caught with their pants down. So, you know, it doesn't it doesn't apply to anybody else. Only if you've been in that situation do you truly understand and make a cognitive effort to do better.
You know, you're right. And unfortunately, people do look at life that way. And I mean, all of us do to some degree, right? I mean, if we haven't experienced it, we have our own perception or our own outlook on that situation, whatever that situation is. I like to believe, I really do believe that in situations like you've described to us, the normal human would understand that other things need to be done, must be done. There's a duty to do that, especially from the brotherhood of the profession of arms, the brother and sisterhood of profession of arms. So, but yeah, there are a lot of times where, you know, you're right, where people are like, well, you know what, I would have handled it differently, or maybe you should do this or you should do that, because it hasn't actually happened to them. They don't know necessarily how to respond, but that's a sad state to find ourselves in, especially if we're calling ourselves leaders, leaders of our nation's sons and daughters. If we think that we really have to experience it to be able to truly lead, and that's, I know you're not saying that, but that's the reality we find ourselves in sometimes in some organizations, some cultures, right? And that's just right. Bad. We got to get past that. So what is your advice to people that haven't walked that line yet, right? They hadn't walked that trail, they hadn't gone down that road. What would be your advice? Because, you know, you can't test for experience, right? You can't read a book for experience. You got to earn the experience. But what would be your advice to those that maybe just haven't had an opportunity to walk the road long enough yet, how to be a more effective leader? What are some simple steps they might be able to take?
In my opinion, one of the things is, you know, you just can't get complacent, because when you're getting complacent and you get into a routine, then everything else becomes routine and there's a problem staring you in the face, but it is your norm. So you really aren't open, your eyes aren't open to be able to identify that. And going back from that, you know, leaders, they say leaders are born. And I've heard other people say that leaders aren't born, they're created, they're made. But I do believe that there are characteristics within the different personality types that have more influence on the ability to lead. But at the same time, being a good follower sometimes is more important than being a good leader.
Oh, that's gold right there, man. Because yeah, we're all doing that.
I've done a lot more following than I have leading. And I remember the leaders that stood out to me the most. And those are the ones that knew your child's name. They knew your wife's name. They knew where you lived at. They checked on you to make sure you're okay. And even though they had 120 or 150 GIs under them, they still knew things like that. And that shows me you care.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm going to go to work 15 minutes early and stay 15 minutes late if I need to, because I'm working for you and I respect you like that.
You hit on the key point that I'm taking away from what I hear you say is, and you said it right there at the end, is just, you know, you got to care. You got to care about the human across from you, around you, you know, beside you. You can't go through life and read a book, and reading is great, right? Reading is great. And I know you're a well-educated man yourself. Reading is awesome. But you can't just do that and say, hey, I'm good to go now. You actually got to start applying that. And sometimes that copy paste don't work so right. You know, sometimes you plagiarize leadership. That's one of the things you just can't plagiarize. You got to go out and do it. And you got to, it's a crock pot method, right? Instead of not to throw too many phrases or Calebisms out there, but you're not going to put this joker in the microwave and be done in 25 seconds. You know, this is going to take some time to do. So I love your perspective on it, man. And thanks for sharing that with us. I don't want to cut you short by any means, but one of the questions that's just been burning a hole in my head since we started talking is something I want to ask you. What drives you today? What is your why? What is that thing that gets Jeremy up every day now?
To be honest with you, it's a blessing to be able to go work with Chad and, you know, do construction again that I haven't done in, you know, 12, 15 years. And we go a lot slower because we're both injured. But, you know, we work at our own pace. But just knowing that I remember a lot more about my job than I thought I did. So, you know, that in itself is kind of a reward for me. But one of the driving things that keeps me going is I cook a lot of food during the week and on the weekends when I don't work. And I share a lot of my food. Some days I don't even eat. I just pass it out. But it brings joy to me. And, you know, being in the military, it's beyond ourselves. It's serving others. And after 17 years of serving, it was ingrained into me that that's just the way you do things. And so I continue to serve. And that's always brought a level of peace to my heart, because I'm still able to kind of pay forward and do better for somebody else. Because, you know, everybody makes mistakes in their life and they carry demons. But, you know, taking the time to forgive yourself and then doing things to make wrongs right and to pay for it, I believe that kind of helps get rid of the "oh crap" with an attaboy, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of what I'm doing. Cooking's always been my passion, you know this, but I've since turned it up to another level, and we're not playing any more games around here. I didn't go to recess in school because we don't play games.
Man, we need more of that Jeremy right there. So y'all listening to this, y'all have no idea. If you don't know Jeremy, you're missing out in the world. But when we were in Afghanistan back in, what was that, man? Was that eight? It was eight, wasn't it? I think it was eight.
Yeah, eight, nine.
I've been there for so many daggum times, I can't remember which is which. Now, Jeremy is the only person I know that can be in the middle of Afghanistan. We're getting mortars and rockets and everything else they're throwing at us. I don't know, it's like five times a day, it seemed like. And you build a full, you didn't actually build a full furniture set, but you had all kind of stuff going on. What was that wood that we had? Or was it like you called it redwood?
Purple Heart.
Purple Heart, that's it.
Yeah, Warner fooled with that a lot more than I did, but I was always messing around with something in the carpenter shop. I mean, you know, you can only run so many miles a day in the evening, so you got to have something to do. And then, you know, of course, work, but, you know, you get up at 4 o'clock like normal and shower and do your little run and come in, and then you would work by six. So you ain't got nothing to do for 2 hours. You might as well build something cool for back home.
I tell you what, you remember, we'll do some name drops, man. J-Mo, we were out one night. Gosh, I don't remember. It was late. It was later in our deployment because it was flipping cold out there. And we had this concrete that was setting up. We were prepping for the surge. For our people in the audience, if you're not in the military, remember back in the day, about 2009-10 timeframe, it was a big surge in Afghanistan. And Jeremy and I, we were out there prepping for that. I think we were the paving crew for Afghanistan or something. But anyway, remember the monster shot? That's a whole different shit. Well, that's a different story. We'll get back to that in a second. But anyway, we're out watching concrete set up, you know, that's for our civilian audience. That's the thing. Some people actually do that. But anyway, you got to, you know, make sure, you know, when it's freezing temperatures, that the right temperatures maintain, all that stuff. Anyway, I was about delirious, man. I think I'd been up like 18 hours or something. And J-Mo and Red were out there with me. And there was a rabbit that took off across the area there in front of it. And J-Mo's like, hey, boss, we ain't in the country, man. You can't be shooting that rabbit.
Oh, I miss old J-Mo and Red. Otis and I talk about them periodically, Kimmins. And, you know, cause he's in Mississippi now, outside of Jackson. He works at the Veterans Cemetery, keeping it all manicured and everything. But we were talking about this same group of people a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, I told him that you had invited me for a Zoom call and everything. And we got to talk about you and J-Mo and Red. That was back in the good old days.
Man, I tell you what, that was a tight crew right there, man.
We got a lot of work done. I mean, we had three plumbers with us. They had no job, so they poured concrete along with us.
Man, hey, we won't get too crazy, but remember old Peter? We won't say last names for some of these guys.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Man, what a great human being. And, man, I need to link back up with him. I tell you what, for our civilian audience, if you've never experienced a deployment, you shouldn't go out and try to find one. But I tell you, I think it just makes some of us, you know, it brings you closer together. But obviously, as Jeremy shared, it has its ugly sides. But, man, I tell you what, I've got ships were formed in Afghanistan that I'll never forget, man. But we were a good crew, man. I'd go to war with those guys any day. You remember old Walter, man? That dude.
Oh,
that
yeah, for
that.
Sure. Hey, remember when we tried to get out of there and it was 17 different flight cancellations, and then the one time they mustered everybody up like we were getting out of there, and all they was trying to do was get a body count of how many people they actually had to get to IUD. Kyrgyzstan.
Goodness gracious. Hey, were you
that
on
was
the
a, that
C-130
was a hot mess.
Were you on a C-130 with us that me
yeah,
and Jim?
Yeah, I was in the middle of all that nonsense. Remember, you and I slept in one of the airports in that one of them rooms off to the side that had all the galaxy stuff in it. And we slept in there until the gates opened up. We bailed. Got out of there.
I went to the talk and I told him, I said, you're going to find us an airplane out of here. They didn't listen to it. I was a tech sergeant, if you remember back then. Anyway, I never will forget that. I think they were the West Virginia National Guard. I think I keep remembering. He's like, hey, y'all looking for a flight? I was like, heck yeah. I might have used a different language then. And he's like, well, come on, boys. We can load y'all up. I was like, are we really leaving this time?
Right, right, right.
Anyway, man, it's been great.
I think that was 17 days trying to get home.
Oh, my goodness, man. I think that.
But with, you know, with the ops tempo and with all the surge we had in there, surprisingly, we got out when we did.
I need to send you a picture, man. I don't know if you're in the one. I'll look and see when we all – remember, we were all in our monster kit because they ran out of ripping.
Yeah, see, you got to remember the Carpenters got the okey-doke on that because they didn't know about it. Bleaster and me and Mike came to the job site, and then y'all come up pulling up with daggum monster drinks. Hey, I remember that picture, though. I remember it very clearly.
Well, the energy drink that sponsored the war, also known as Rip It. That's an inside joke, right? Nobody's actually sponsoring the war. But somebody take it out of context. But, man, so when we ran out of Rip It's, if you don't know what a Rip It is, you're missing out on the world. But we went and got some monsters. What is his name? Muntian, I think. Anyway, he got the monsters, and he got me hooked on those things for a little bit. That's probably what destroyed my stomach, to be honest with you. But speaking of Rippets, man, and I know we're the audience probably thinks we're really off course now, but that's all. Hey, you know what? It's just two brothers catching up. But this last time I was in Afghanistan at 20, there were some youngins out there with us. And, you know, they said they were talking about Rippets. So I was like, look, you youngins have no idea. When this war first started, Rippets kept us alive better than a body armor did.
I don't think we would have done near as well in OIF without Rippets.
That's a true
statement. I mean, I'm just going to put that out there because there was such a high ops tempo. We were constantly turning missions that, you know, people were delirious.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Good old times. I tell you what, man, bringing this thing full circle, put a bow on it. Let's land this bird on a strip here. What do you want to leave our audience with? I think we got a few people running to the recruiter to sign up because they want to go get them a taste of a deployment. But what do you, on a serious note, because I know you've been through it, man, and I really respect you a lot. I know you know that, but I just want to say it publicly. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing a bit of your story, making some leadership principles, laying those out there for some young leaders and experienced leaders out there that take a closer look to care about your people. But what kind of, I'll ask you one more question at the end of this about legacy, but what do you want to pass on from your entire story? Any parting words or last words you want to talk about?
Just mainly just look after your people as leaders, whether you're a first line supervisor and that immediate point of contact to your troop, or if you're in the middle of the chain of command or you're a shop chief or a super, you know, if issue significant enough for it to get to your level, you should be tracking on that daily. Because if, God forbid, if that airman loses their way and, you know, passes away or takes his or her life, you know, that blood is on your hands now. Because you were briefed and you still neglected to do anything about it. And that's what's really unsad about it. Granted, I know that the ops tempo gets crazy. However, comma, without people, the mission fails.
That's 100% right.
And that's the way I look at it. So if anything, just, it's simple. Just take care of your people.
I appreciate it.
We have the technology these days. It's a matter of a text message. Hey, Sarge, it's Chief. I just want to check, see if you was doing okay. Do you need anything from the squadron? No, sir, I'm good. I'll see you. All right, I'll text you next week then. That took 2 seconds.
So like you said, man, you got to
look at his TikTok and send out a few text messages, he'd probably go a lot further in leadership. You smelling what I'm stepping in?
You know it. I'm bagging what you're raking, brother. There's too many people out there.
What I'm putting down. Come on.
Yeah, they out there internet not inspiring, man. I tell you the truth, man. You hitting the nail on the head, and it is simple. And I think sometimes people want it to be so complex and they miss the simplicity of it and then just treating people good. And so, man, thanks for that wrap up. One last question and I'll let you out of here, man. What do you want your legacy to be? They hanging around your tombstone one day, chit-chatting about the good old days like we just were. But what do you want that lasting word to be? What do you want them to remember about you most? What do you think that legacy is going to be? Or what do you want it to be?
He was crazy as hell, but he always had my six.
No, that's the truth on both parties.
That's I mean, I have some friends, you know, Chad, for instance, he's my oldest military friend since January of 96. and he's seen my good and my bad, but he's loyal. He took on the responsibility of being my friend. And so, you know, when he called me and said, hey, I'm gonna need some help in the spring, you doing anything? I was like, no, brother. I said, can we get camper out there and I'll be out there to work and it ain't gonna bother me a bit. And that's what friends do, because he's always been loyal to me. And there's only a handful of friends that have put up with my shenanigans and nonsense all the time. And, you know, went through an opiate addiction with me and got that cleaned up. And they never left my side. There was a lot of times where I was a complete unfiltered a-hole to them, and you know, they took that and they never left my six. And that is the few friends that I value with my life.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, you hold on to people like that, and I know you're that kind of friend as well, man. And so thank you so much again for being on here, brother, sharing with us, sharing with the world about what real looks like, what real courage looks like, what real good character looks like. Man, I'm blessed to be able to call you friend and brother.
Roger, so thanks. That. Me too, sir. And anytime you have a topic that you feel that I'd be interested in, or something I want to, you know, bite off on, especially being a PME instructor for 3 years, you know, you also being a education instructor, and you know, I had some invaluable times, and some of the traits that I still carry to this day is things that students taught me in the flight room.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had some dynamic junior NCO leaders, dynamic. And I knew they were going to go places. I called it back when I first met you and you put on, 1 July, you put tech on. And I told Jay Monetti, I said, that's the chief master of the Air Force right there. I said, he think I'm playing. I said, he's going to go places. And here we are. And I like, what, 11-year chief? Not too bad.
It's not quite 11, but I appreciate you, man.
It's a little more than that, but it's way below the national average.
Yeah, you know me. I try to take that road less talked about. I don't like to talk about it a lot because I've been surrounded.
I know,
by...
but you know, when you got to, when you see something, you got to point it out. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I mean, I know you're a humble person when it comes to that, but you know, you look at your bio, there's no BS in that. And anybody that knows you know that you never once had your nose or mouth in an area it shouldn't have been trying to get promoted. I mean, that was your work and your leadership and your efforts that compounded and got you where you're at today. But you just understood the system too and what needed to be accomplished in each phase.
That and just
and some of the NCOs at Tech and Master, they don't see that because they're just burnt out by them.
Yeah, that. And then, you know, I was really blessed, man. The biggest component of all that is being the support structure, whether that's great airmen, NCOs like yourself, had some key leaders along the way that took care of me as well, but also the family support system, man. So I can't take all the credit for sure. It's just some great people and timing and opportunity, man. It's, you can't control either one of those. You can only control what you do with them.
Queen of yours has had your 6-year whole career. I know that for a fact.
That's 100. We'll keep that on 100. Amy is well, something
bless her,
special.
Putting on with all them hard-headed boys and you, bless her heart. I've always given credit to that lady because your boys was growing real fast and they busy and she just had to hang on.
Yeah, there's a special palace in heaven for her for sure, man.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. Yeah. All right. VIP entrance only.
All right, brother, I'm gonna wrap this up. I'll stay on after we shut the recording. Now
just remember the CE world, if we don't work it, don't work.
Absolutely. Thanks again, brother. I appreciate you being on here,
to be on the show and give me a little insight, and hopefully, you know, one day a future leader will remember this conversation and make a small change, and that's what we need to make, big change.
Absolutely. Hey, until next time, y'all, let's keep it real. We out.